coaching setting is that I am here to help you to find resources in you to solve some issue you have.
Yes.
In supervision, we do not have issues. Managers in general, they are quite, like, we feel lonely in organizations. So they need somebody to openly reflect their practice. I always thought that it's my responsibility, that it's my guilt, and it's that I did not manage my workload. I maybe took too sensitive some things. Now, from the distance, I realized that there were other factors as well at some point, and somehow felt those glass ceilings. And whatever I've done, there was some feeling that something stops. It's quite sensitive.
What's your work life look like right now? What are you doing? What is Viltoria professionally, maybe personally as well?
Mm-hmm. So I am working as a supervisor.
Okay.
Supervisor, coach sometimes, and I work with individuals, teams, groups, and organizations. We divide it into the separate forms of supervision.
You know, I was thinking while listening to you that we probably haven't clarified the terms, because supervision, right?
Yes.
And I think it's important to define what is supervision, what is coaching. If I was listening to this conversation as a consulting, not related person, or even related maybe, I would struggle to understand the difference even by supervisor and manager in this case, because we oftentimes, at least in the past, we would use the word supervisor, and employees, we would use supervisees, in the sense that supervisor is ensuring work performance, and that's their job. But when you talk about supervisor, it seems that you're talking about supervision of something else and different type of supervision. And you also said that you're a coach. So in your head, it's possible, the way I understand, that supervisor role and coach role entail a little bit different things, or maybe not a little bit. So I think it would be interesting to discuss these two, at least. What do you think?
My teachers, let's say, who are quite well known in Europe, from they are coach, they are supervisors as well. They said that at one point or another in their career, they thought that supervision and coaching is the same, or at another point that it's quite different. So definitely it is a confusion. And so supervision is a consultancy form. That's one. So supervision, for me, is related to coaching and related to psychotherapy as well. What's the difference with psychotherapy is that the field of investigation is different. In psychotherapy, in most cases, not necessarily in most cases, but in most cases, we talk about personal life. In supervision, our field of investigation is work. Okay, then we have coaching and supervision. So for me, this difference is a little bit hard to explain, and I think you need to choose your own definition to some point. It depends on which certification maybe you have. I separated. Coaching is dedicated to reach one goal. Supervision is dedicated to explore a little bit more. For me, supervision goal is to raise consciousness or deepen consciousness about you, about who you are at work, how do you react, about your reaction to this, how you influence your work. In supervision, we explore everything. In coaching, we explore quite a lot to reach one goal. I can add one separation from one of my teachers. So he said something like, coaching setting is that I am here to help you to find resources in you to solve some issue you have.
Yes.
In supervision, we do not have issues. It's quite a black or white. Of course, people are coming with some issues, challenges, wishes, and sometimes we work with goals as well. And definitely, sometimes I use growth method. it's part this goal, achieving some goal might be part of supervision. Yeah. But in general, supervision for me is exploration. Who are you? A little bit more familiar with psychotherapy, not in this very deep level.
Yeah.
You at work. Okay, you as an individual. We as a team. How we work together. Mm-hmm. What's important about us? What challenges we went through? What kind of team we are? Yeah, and when I work with people, quite usually they try to find negative aspects, and I feel that my role is to somehow invite them to make a distance from, not to evaluate, just look with whole curiosity, with whole respect to yourself or to your team, and just to look at what it is, who we are, who do we influence, what kind of food print we live as a team or as an individual, just to explore. And then when you explore, when you became more conscious about yourself, then you can change if you want to.
Yeah.
If you want to. Yeah. And then we can have some goals, of course. But
yeah, that definitely sounds like certain forms of psychotherapy where the goal is to understand yourself, understand your values, understand what things mean to you, understand maybe even your psychology, maybe your biases, maybe your thinking patterns, but not necessarily to fix something, but just to become, expand your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely true to existential psychotherapy, definitely true to humanistic psychotherapy. So it feels that ideologically, supervision, how you describe, draws from that scene. And I love that you developed that link between psychotherapy and supervision, because oftentimes there's a lot of stigma in the management consulting industry, let's say, to say that you're doing something with the psyche, as if coaching is not doing something with the psyche. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we make it very separate, So I like that. And also think, I guess I would add that there are certain forms of coaching that are, like you described, very solution focused, very goal driven, maybe even like a program where you come for 16 sessions to achieve a specific goal, maybe to set up a business or whatever. But I feel that when you go certain levels up, for example, in coaching accreditation from associate level to professional level to master level, it kind of becomes like how you describe supervision. It kind of becomes also about all those things. And in my case, for example, I work with one company as a coach, and in their leadership academy setting, every student gets 4 sessions. So it's kind of difficult to achieve something when you have only 4 sessions. Mm-hmm. So it like becomes a supervision. I basically, the person comes with a question, an idea, a concern, a worry, issue, whatever. And the person gets out of it with something, maybe new learning, maybe new task, maybe a plan, whatever is important for the person. So I think that sometimes it also depends on the format, and the less, I guess, yeah, I will maybe contradict myself, but I guess the less sessions you have, it should be maybe more solution focused, but it's not. It's usually maybe about learning. The mm-hmm. more sessions you have, okay, it's more likely that you achieve something. Then you need to have more sessions, maybe with time gaps, but still it has to be a process. Whereas it feels to me that for supervision, you can come just for one session, explore something, get value, but it doesn't mean that you have to like supervise yourself for a whole year to grow or whatever, like in psychotherapy. What do you think about this?
I do not start with less. I start with 6 sessions. Of course, clients might quit. I did not have such experience, but it might happen. It might be that they solve the issue. It might be that somehow we can't work together. And for example, I have some managers that I work more than 30 sessions, because managers in general, they are they feel lonely in organization.
Yeah.
So they need somebody to openly reflect their practice. In some organizations or in some settings, you can't openly share everything with your manager. You as a manager, as at least as Erland, you need to contain quite a lot, to not to put some, I don't know, emotions to your team. And supervision is a place to reflect. So yeah, we started as really in a high level, yeah? What kind of manager you are, for example, what impact do you do for the system? But we explore relatively small issues. For example, with managers group on Tuesday. So the issue was that the manager feels that his employees do not value his work.
Mm-hmm.
And we discuss this kind of topic. Yeah. We can discuss about something about annual work reviews or however reflections with employees. Yeah. We might solve or discuss some issues with one on another employees. On the other hand, like, you know, supervision, there are a few functions. It's called normative, formative, restorative of a supervision.
Okay.
And one of them is this formative, and it's related with knowledge. For example, then supervision might be more familiar, like our psychotherapist has supervision. So it might be that sometimes I put ahead of this transformative or developmental supervisor, and I share some knowledge or some insights. It's not that I am I do not share anything. And for example, with one of the clients, actually, he wanted to analyze some relationship with among two departments. And we started to discuss, and we might have went to really, really deep issues, personal issues, interpersonal issues, some issues with products, because one product with whom he has the issues were quite young, newly developed, and so on. But then after some time, I somehow felt and said, do they have the same goals? Those two departments. And he said, no. Yeah, you know, like why I'm sharing this example, that maybe like in some kind of consultancy forms, you do not let yourself to ask this kind of questions. When I feel that it's a place, sometimes I can offer to explore another angles, another topics related to the main topic. And it's a task for me to be ready to all answers. Yes, it might be it might be the case of goals or no. No, it's not related. Let's discuss about the relationship. So for me, it's a goal, or I like working with a stance to be open in any kind of for any kind of reactions. But sometimes I suggest something.
So that's the normative function.
Formative.
What a
normative is about formative. Ethics. More about ethics.
Okay, tell me more than about the normative one.
Okay, so it's about ethics. And for example, if I work with coaches or other supervisors, it might be. So I know some ethics standards, or that or person has some ethics standards, so we can discuss if it's necessary. It's quite rare to explore this, but in you can explore this topic maybe not directly, but for example with managers, whether it's ethically to work this way or another way. Related with organization, for example, culture, does it suit your way of work? Does it suit your organization, culture requirements? Or it might be that way as well.
That makes sense, if you allow me to jump in, because here I'm seeing the relationship with supervision in psychotherapy or counseling or related, or even coaching, for example, where you come to a supervisor to discuss cases and to grow professionally. And it feels like it's very similar to this type of supervision you discuss. And in those type of supervisions where, for example, me as a counselor, therapist, I go to my supervisor when I have a challenging client who maybe don't value my work, as you discussed recently, and or I feel that they don't value, but they actually value. And then I come and we discuss the person, I share some information, and then I get maybe some guidance, some advice. Maybe I get some feedback about blind spots in myself and the way I'm thinking ethically. Should I decide for the client, do they value or not? Maybe it's their job, it's not my job, So definitely feels like a very important aspect. And it seems that the reason why it's rare, because people don't necessarily in your setting come with an ethical question, maybe in Lithuania, for example. But when you think generally, or maybe specifically about supervision of psychotherapists and counselors, then you kind of, as a supervisor, you have to be proactive and say that, mm-hmm. look, maybe you haven't considered that this is an ethical issue. So do I understand correctly that a supervisor, based on your methodology, has this competency and even responsibility sometimes to reflect back ethical dilemmas, ethical challenges, see blind spots in the client?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, that's interesting.
Supervision, we can go through other, but supervision in Lithuania started with psychotherapists and later with social work. So in Lithuania, social workers have to have supervision each year. Managers,
yes,
has to have 6 hours, social workers 8 hours. So, you know, like
in this industry, you mean?
Yeah, in this industry. So it's a must. It's a requirement from the ministry, from the government. They have to head this way, and it's a way they develops their competence, and those ethical issues and this normative function of supervision appears here. So while I work more with business or managers in social work and teams in social area as well as business, I have less of those cases, but it's not rare in general in this field, but this particular
Yes, got it. And that's, I guess, a problem maybe that maybe in our country, maybe in business in general, the managers don't necessarily very consciously, very proactively think, am I behaving ethically? I mean, it's sometimes you think whether you behave legally. This is why we have, every company has internal lawyer usually, or legal team, but you don't necessarily think whether you behave ethically. And what you pinpoint in that, it's rare for someone to bring an ethical question, a normative question, I guess says something about the stage where we are as a community, as a as a capitalist society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess it shouldn't be. And what you're describing definitely resonates with me, because I was always asking myself how to navigate these questions, because in my work, there are situations when you need to work on goals and it's very specific, and then coaching comes in. You have to work on mental health issues, then psychotherapy comes in. There are situations when you just want to learn something about yourself as a person, maybe professional, maybe husband, wife, partner, whatever. Then maybe skills of supervision come in, or psychotherapy as well. So it feels like, at least to me, that supervision as a methodology tries to tackle various different problems and allow supervisors to work with those different problems, ethical problems, learning questions, awareness questions, and maybe even sometimes goal questions if that's needed. So interesting. Yeah, I like how you define it, and it makes sense practically, because you should be qualified in all those three. What about transformative? We haven't, or not transformative, what was
restorative,
it?
Restorative, sorry. I think we have. So it's,
yeah.
I think it's currently it's the most important topic. I think because of everything, because of war we have here, so it's a lot of stress felt by quite a lot of people, some post-COVID COVID experience, which is still here, some requirements, what kind of person you need to be in some kind of organization, and so on and so forth. So in all the positions, all the quite a lot of specialists and managers have this issue as well. And even with teams, we, for example, when somebody approaches us, and for example, the first problem they share, that the team is exhausted, they are not motivated, but they were, or there is a tension in a team. So it's about this. And when, for example, I have you coaches, as you said, you as a psychotherapist go to your supervisor. So there are some coaches who can who wants to explore their practice as well. So this is all about the topics you share. I think my client thinks this or that. Or me as a manager, I give everything for my team, and I don't know, who am I? Yeah, all those kind of questions about their emotional well-being, personal, so fits in this category, let's say. For example, I don't know, yesterday I had one client who was stressed about one, let's say, about relationship with one person. And she was like really stressed, overwhelmed, and it stopped her to it stopped her from doing some kind of tasks, let's say, you know, I don't want to share quite a lot.
Yes,
and
yes,
we explore, we explored what is, and we started it, I don't know if you know, 7i model. When we took not a client, but this a person as a client, as another person, and I asked quite a lot of questions about the person she had such a strong feelings for. And after that, she realized something, in this case, that she gave too much power, or imagined that this person has too much power, like a lot of power, and that... I don't want to expand quite a lot, but for example, we only discussed about the person who my client had really like stressed about the relationship. And after the situation, after the exploring the situation with this person and this person behavior, why he might behave like that, she went out of the supervision quite relieved. So this is about the supervisee's emotional well-being.
Okay, so in a way, what I'm hearing is that in a way, a supervisor should or has to be competent in those three functions, where the one is, for example, normative, so that's about the ethical competency. Then there is the formative one, right? Which is about basically having knowledge. So in your case, your experience in leading teams, working with teams, working as an HR person, and being able to share knowledge, because you're also a psychologist, maybe adding some psychological information. And then there is that restorative function, which is kind of about well-being, right? So like three hats. And I mean, that's a lot. And
yes,
how can you be qualified in all of the three? Let me know about this.
You know, I don't think that it's much more than, I don't know, in psychotherapy. It depends how. Yeah, I think in our work, you first of all, at least I think, yeah, and I learn quite a lot. I have my super individual supervisee. I have two intervision groups. I have meta supervisions led by Lithuanian Supervisors Association. Some supervisions and workshops from European Association, and still I am interested in constellations a little bit and systemic coaching. Mm. So I learn this perspective currently. So,
but you know, Viltari, to stop you a little bit, I guess what I'm asking is about the prerequisites for a supervisor. And it feels to me like supervision is a postgraduate competency. You have to have something beneath it to give substance. So, I mean, in your case, I mean, the way you describe supervision, I mean, understanding ethics is important. So you can definitely get it from psychological studies. That's for sure. Maybe philosophy even. When it comes to the knowledge session, so a knowledge function, it totally depends on what area you're working on. So having experience in that field, maybe also some academic training. When it comes to restorative, once again, psychotherapy, counseling, social work, maybe all those areas. So what about this professional aspect? Do you need to have certain educational prerequisites or experience to become a supervisor?
It's really postgraduate studies in Lithuania. I think that your experience or studies influences with what clients you will work as a supervisor. But sometimes I value my experience. Sometimes it's good to not know. I can bring my competence or if it's necessary about the team, teamwork, some processes, but I do not have experience working with their clients. It's maybe like with psychotherapists. Do you need to be divorced to work with the person who is going through this process? Sometimes it helps, sometimes it's not. So for example, with managers, there are some people who work with managers without managerial experience. They have one experience with this kind of person. I have another one. I say we, because quite frequently we work with my friend and partner, especially with teams. Teams and organizations are so complex that we work together, and it helps us and it helps teams as well, I think.
Yes. Yeah, it's important to balance out the experience and competency, because maybe you are more qualified in certain functions and areas, your partner is in the others, and then you balance out each other and support each other. So that totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we not frequently, but sometimes we go out of some session or meeting with a client, and we say, for example, I say, I heard this and that, and she says, no, this and that. And sometimes, like, we say and we laugh, were we in the same meeting or not? And it's important that we can discuss what happened, why we spot such a different things, heard the same sentence from really different angles. What's happening? Is this my story or is it something about the client? Quite a lot of reflection questions. So when you work alone, you have only your story. When you work two of you, so it's more complex. You need to align two stories somehow, and there's a client, of course, with the complexity. But I think it brings more value for the client.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. You worked as a product manager, you worked as a IT manager of system administrators, DevOps people. How did you end up working with that team? Maybe to get some context, it would be really interesting, I think.
So one day, as I worked with HR, one of the managers, and this manager wrote to me that we need to talk. Well, it was not the easiest message I've got, because quite a lot of scenarios came from my mind that I've done quite a lot of mistakes as well, what I've said and so on and so forth. Even the relationship was good. And he came and said that he will look for Scrum Master for one of the IT infrastructure
teams. How long was it ago?
2015.
Okay,
so it's 8 years. Mm-hmm. Eight years ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember my first reaction. I asked whether he's stupid, and he said maybe, but maybe you can try. And I said okay. I thought that Scrum Master is a facilitator, moderator. And, you know, I already worked with the teams. I delivered trainings, one day, 2 days, or even 10 days training. So I had this competence, and I was interested in the new field, I think. And actually, I knew that it's a challenge. I knew that I would need work a lot, but I did not have a question whether in general I can.
So you were a Scrum Master, but then somewhere in the process, then you became the IT manager. So maybe you can also add a little bit more context, if you may.
You know, the department grew, and my manager was managing the whole department, and we had to split. So I started to manage DevOps like team, and then it expanded to three DevOps teams.
You came as a person who doesn't have an IT background, is not like versatile on all those technical things. Your job is to be, you know, the person who moderates the conversations, helps with group dynamics, and just like kind of a psychologist, mm-hmm. team coach in a way. And when I'm listening to you, it feels that it was very natural to you, and you just did what you knew, and it was rewarded because you became a manager. So I guess it worked probably.
Probably. I think, first of all, it was like a game for them as well. You know,
oh, really?
during the first stand-up, they were discussing, they had some they had some issues that client is not responding. And they were discussing some issues about that client is not responding.
Yeah.
Okay, so after the stand-up or at the end of their discussion, I somehow suggested my services, that I can organize the meeting with this client, and maybe I can help to somehow to this, like, communicate with this client. And yeah, of course, it was, you know, the client, the service was messaging service. The client was another system which were not responding. So yeah, everybody laughed. They suggested me to learn Linux and invite this client to respond. But yeah, it's one of the first memories from my Scrum experience. So those guys, I think they were... That's why, like, it was quite a lot of fun when we worked. We really worked a lot, but we had fun as well. So they started to educate me. I remember they explained to me how development tooling is working, the development process and tooling, and they used dumpling methodology, how dumplings are made, how they reach our dinner tables and so on. And one day, one person said, maybe it's enough. Maybe, she will go to developers. It's not good that she would explain them how the dumplings are made in our system. And they started to teach me actually how the system works.
Yes.
I've graduated from Vilnius Lyceum. So, yeah, I was quite good at maths and so on. And
for context, that's like one of the top high schools, gymnasiums in Lithuania.
Top. I wanted to stress more that it's a technical school.
Well, I want to stress that you are smart, so.
Thank you. Yeah, so I thought at 10th grade, I considered studying psychology or physics. And it was equal for me. And I was having quite a hard time to decide. So maybe that's why I think I missed cognitive load in working in HR. So in IT, I got it.
Yes, I'm sure that you got it. But I loved your example about the message services and the client, because I really, to be honest, when you were talking about this, I also was thinking about a customer that they are serving internally, externally, that you want to mediate a conversation. So I'm totally on the joke. Yeah, that's great. It's tough, when you have to be open to not knowing, not understanding things. IT related or similar. It's tough, let's not be, stereotypical or whatever, but especially in that year, being a female manager, female IT manager in IT infrastructure, I think that's a lot of layers, you know what I mean? And that's rare. And because it's rare, I love this. And I think your experience is, I think it's a good example how to negate certain stereotypes. So this is why I guess I'm very interested in how was it for you, and what were the challenges, what were the good things about that?
After some time, after 3 years, I realized that for somebody, this was still not possible in their minds. So my learning is that you are not alone in the system. You bring something and other people bring their experience, their biases, their beliefs. And this is the challenge of a female from HR in IT infrastructure.
How did you experience that people had this towards you, or how did you feel of this, or whatever?
It's quite sensitive, and I did not felt it in my team, but there were situations. Look, at some point, and somehow felt those glass ceilings.
Yeah.
And whatever I've done, there was some feeling that something stops. And that's only, there are some situations which I let myself to explore only now. But for example, after 3 years of working or so, or maybe 4 years, I did not recall, one of very important person in organization started to explain me and inform me about what my department is doing, challenges we had, what are the future, what's good, what's not so good about my department, my teams. I was managing all three of them. And then I realized...
You mean while you were managing or when you left the company?
Yeah, while I was managing, there was such a situation, then we had an opportunity to discuss with one important person. And and for some time, I was not sure what happens, why he is explaining those things, and so on.
Interesting.
And then I realized that, I don't know, he thought that whether I was, I don't know, admin, like recruiter at best, and this position. And he thought that other people are doing some works, having my responsibilities and so on. So that's one of the saddest experience from my career. And, you know, partly I agree with that. I haven't done it by myself. Yeah, I was not a technical manager. I am the manager who involves other people into some decisions in general. Especially when you work with high competence, like really, really high competent people. So how in my world, how you cannot involve them into some decisions? So I had a team, competent team. I had my manager with whom we discussed really a lot. I had IT consultant with whom we worked together all those years, and who did a lot to form strategy together with the team. And of course, I was not alone. I did not done something by myself. But I even would not do it in HR as well, I think. Mm-hmm. Of course, I would know more, but I would not do it, especially with such a competent team.
There is a bias, I think. I'm not sure it's in business in general. Is it like in Western business companies only? But there is that bias that if you are a manager, you have to make the decisions in that way. You have to, but not like it even feels that you have to think on your own and influence people doing what you think is good. And this is why I guess we sometimes get these comments that what do you know to make decisions in a way? Mm-hmm. And if let's say you are being as an intermediary, you are involving other people, it's like you're not doing your job, kind of. That's, I guess, the conclusion. But you said very wisely, even if you are an HR and a professional, it doesn't mean that you cannot involve other people. And for example, there is that idea of sociocracy. I'm not sure if you heard of that, that where you basically make decisions collectively and there's no one final decision maker. And until everyone is like everyone, 100% people are not in agreement, you don't make decisions. You know, for example, Scandinavian countries, they are maybe a little bit stereotypically, but there is a trend that let's do a lot of meetings, and until we discuss properly, then the train will go smoothly. But until that, we have to talk things through. And there are situations where it doesn't work. There are situations where it does work. So I think what you experienced was kind of a very skewed, biased perspective, influenced by the culture and environment where we were and maybe even are still in business, I guess. What do you think about this?
I think that, you know, with all those being true, I made decisions. Because as a manager, you have to
take responsibility.
And some, like when you have 15 people, so of course not everybody would be happy. When you have 30 development team as a client, of course not everybody would be happy with the decision. And it was such as some situations, of course.
And I still think that even if you are taking final responsibility, which you do as a manager, it doesn't mean that you cannot involve our people and not necessarily share responsibility, but share decision-making, share, share ideas, how can we go about it, get input, and what's wrong about that, especially if you're not a technical person, because I think it would be even stupider to make decisions without having that background, without consulting people, especially in the beginning when you are still trying to navigate that IT world. So, yeah, I mean, we are not perfect, you know, and I think that that person also learned their lesson because time's changing and new practices are coming in. And I had clients when I was as a recruiter, even in 2021, who started hiring team leads, engineering managers without a technical background, mm-hmm. where you're kind of like having one-on-ones and doing all those kind of stuff on a very low level, ensuring the learning process of that person without a engineering background, for example. And I mean, and people can do that, and we see that they can do it. And we have witnessed a lot of examples where people with a technical background become scrum masters, become managers, and they force their knowledge, they don't involve other people, and they don't succeed. So what? Mm-hmm. So that's a good example? No, it's not. You know, it's just one of the examples, you know. So
It's not easy for whole system to let others go in the system, for example, and to manage. What I would do, that everybody can be a manager in IT? Well,
yeah.
How could it be? Like, you know, yes. You need to have courage to even let yourself think that way. In some situation, especially, for example, maybe with a junior's team, then you need to teach people. You need tech manager and sure. tech lead. Sometimes, for example, in my situation, we had some juniors, but we organized learning from senior engineers. And we had, as I said, I had a really good technical consultant worked with. So I think it could be different setting. And there are some organizations right now who has two managers, one manager without technical background and one with, who forms a technical strategy or is responsible for making technical strategy.
Yes. Yeah, it makes sense. And understand also your idea about being empathetic about the aspect of not feeling safe, you know, because when you have this idea that only a technical person can understand technical people and help them and support them and blah, 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 without a technical background, you can involve other people. It's tough, you know, to consider such exotic practices that you're not used to. And then forced by that insecurity, forced by those doubts, you start challenging people. And you probably were also challenged in this by the fact that that person and maybe some other people didn't feel safe that you lack this. Not necessarily that you are not performing, but just for the sake of principle, you can have this feeling. And it doesn't mean that the thoughts that are produced by this feeling are rational. And CBT mm-hmm. is cognitive behavioral therapy. We differentiate between emotions and emotional thinking. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, you can understand where the person is coming from in a way. So it makes sense what you're saying. What about the impact on your psychology? Because what you're describing, I have these examples in my own counseling practice where, for example, I get people without, let's say, a technical background, let's say a male-identified person without a technical background who leads a team, or a female person with a technical background who leads a team. And, you know, all these kind of combinations. And especially in startups, I see that imposter syndrome, even if you are male and having a IT background, I see people putting a lot of hours, sometimes doubling during the week, that's sometimes what happens. And I see how people are struggling and they think that they need to prove something to our people because to their managers, because if they don't, they will be fired and they will get this reputation damage. So I see this and I cannot but think about you. What was impact for you as a person and how did you deal with that? What was helpful to you? And maybe it would be helpful for other people who are going through something similar you did.
It's not something unusual I went through. Natural path to burnout. Nothing special, nothing very unusual. First of all, I was really interested in everything. And yeah. I even thought that I would learn Linux, then after that, network, then some programming languages and so on. I was excited about the new career path, the new world I saw, the different how IT people in general live, think, what practices they have, what challenges they have, and so on. I did not work 18 hours. It was only 14 for 7 days in a week. I did not have family. Quite a lot of friends started to have family and then children and so on.
And how old were you at that time when you were describing now?
Now I am almost 40, so it was 30, 32, 33. Good time for job, let's say.
Burning out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I managed to go like this for up to 3 years. But after 4 years, I realized where I were. I always thought that it's my responsibility, that it's my guilt, and it's that I did not manage my workload. I maybe took too sensitive some things. Now, from the distance, I realized that there were other factors as well.
First of all, thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate it, and I think that listeners will appreciate it as well. But what I wanted to say is that I understand that there are situations then maybe not knowing, not having certain knowledge or experience, like very technical, maybe it's good. But I think having the experience of being in the shoes of someone who burned out, in the shoes of someone who had to fight for their reputation or whatever, I think that experience is super important, but it's important only when you reflect on that experience. And this is, I guess, why in psychotherapy, we go through psychotherapy ourselves to ensure that we have, first of all, connection to that experience. Second of all, understanding of that experience. And third, being able to separate when we identify that experience in the other person. And I'm always wondering how coaching happens when a burned out coach coaches someone on burned out. I mean, I can't imagine that. Yeah, there can be a lot of ethical normative questions to work on, right? But yeah, I'm sure that this is probably very helpful to you. And I mean, on the one hand, on the other hand, it can also be tough because as psychologists, we can become very nurturing and maybe become too involved in the person because we want to help them not to go through that. And there is a good idea to allow them to go through what they need to go and get that wise experience, you know. So I'm looking at it from several lenses, I guess, where that experience is very helpful for the consultant, but they also can be detrimental or maybe not help the client.
I really agree to what you say that as a consultant, psychotherapist, coach, supervisor, you need to be as much aware about yourself, conscious about what influences your behavior as you can. And you can't be 100% conscious what's happening, yeah? No. Especially with those harder issues for yourself. For example, I remember like one manager sharing quite similar experience to what I had. So in those situations, I share with them just to be it, just to share that it might influence, and we then go.
Yeah. Yeah, and it can be restorative, I think, speaking of the restorative function. So I see that we still have a little bit of time. I would like to finish with last two short questions. So the first one would be, you said the word consciousness, and your project with our colleagues is called consciousorsummoning.lt. So briefly, what are you guys doing? What are the key services and maybe the key challenges that people might go to you and get help?
We are supervisors and organizational consultants. So we provide services. We started discuss with you individual, team, group, and organizational supervision. And some trainings as well. For example, with burnout, we are working in a workshop setting, not supervision. Let's say we divide it. So, for example, with feedback or work review meetings. So we work as a experiential training setting.
Yes.
So usually people are coming to us, or they are when something is wrong.
Yes.
But we are happy, and we have felt or experienced quite a lot of interesting quite a lot of interesting findings when people are coming to us just to reflect, just like they do not have problems, they do not have issues. But for example, managers, they come to us and they, like, we are in their managerial experience, when in a managerial journey in general, and we make a space for them to reflect and to deepen their consciousness.
Yes. I love it. And the last question would be more general one. I usually finish these conversations with a reflective question. So because it was also an experience we had today, I'm very thankful for it, first of all. Thank you for being open and sensitive and funny and serious and all those experiences we had. So grateful for that, and would love maybe to hear what were your takeaways from this. It doesn't have to be something big, just what pops to your mind. What are you taking from our conversation? Maybe what do you want to pinpoint or emphasize to finish this off?
Personally, I am super afraid to talk in English. I avoid this all the way. And thank you for this conversation. I felt as good as I can.
Did great.
My limits. So yeah, and it's for me like a lesson for me that I should do that. You know, and listen, to try more and more and more. At some point in my career, I did not make a career because I was afraid to speak in English. You know, it's such a huge thing. And the lesson is that for me that you need to try, and I need personally to try more. And another thing is personal or thank. I'm really thankful for you that you listened, you reframed what I say in a really beautiful words, and you, I don't know, spot the essence. So it was really, really rewarding to discuss with you and to be heard what I told.
Thank you, Valteria. Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, it's I appreciate these conversations as well, because I can get a better understanding also of things. And what I noticed is that attempting to rephrase, even if I fail, it still be useful because you will correct me. So I think people also can learn a lot from this, that it's okay, you know, to attempt understanding. And if even if you're not right, you will be corrected and you will learn, you know. So that's, I think, also good. Okay. And also appreciate that you had the courage to speak in English. Understand that there was a little bit trepidation about that, but I mean, you did good and I understood you and I managed to learn a lot. So it means that your English was effective. So thank you.
Thank you.